This is the Lunch Bite with Ian Bess.
Welcome back to the Lunch Bite. The time's just gone 18 minutes past 12. If you're on your way to fetch kids, if you're on your way to a meeting, or if you're just grabbing a lunch, you've got approximately 41 minutes now left of this hour. So let's make it count for you. It gives me great pleasure to welcome Lizette Russo to the studio. Good afternoon, Lizette.
Good afternoon. Thank you for having me.
It's a pleasure, and it's so great to have you on the Lunch Bite. So Lizette, I gave the formal intro to you, to the listeners a little bit earlier as you were coming into the building, and I did mention to everyone that you're a partner at PwC and you lead their accelerated business transformation capability, which is awesome. But you have a very interesting accent. Tell us where that accent comes from.
Sure. Unfortunately, I came to South Africa when I was already an adult, so I never managed to get rid of my accent. But I was born and raised in Istanbul in a small Sephardic community. And I fell in love with a South African, and I followed him.
Yes.
And 20 years down the line, here I am. And that's the background for my accent.
Fantastic. Well, it's not unfortunate. It's a beautiful accent, and it's lovely to hear the different accent. Also, you say you came from a Sephardic community, and was it a big community, or what was the size of the community
Actually,
you came from?
It was a small community. Okay. When I was still there, or when I was growing up, it was around 20,000 people.
Wow.
But today it's a quite oldish community, which is under 15,000.
Okay.
Our proximity, I think, Istanbul's proximity to Israel caused a lot of, or led to a lot of aliyah to Israel in the last 20 years.
Amazing. Hey? So everywhere around the world, we're, as a Jewish community, we're scattered there and we're making an influence. Now,
definitely.
Yeah, absolutely. So now, you also, you have connections to chicken. Now people didn't want to know, like, cause I put out a comment or a tweet last night, and everyone goes like, what is a person that works for PwC as a partner and looks after, acquisitions and transformation and restructuring? What do you know about chicken? So tell me, you do a lot of community work. You love being involved in the community. Where's your involvement been in chicken?
Well, first of all, I eat chicken.
Oh, good.
I eat kosher chicken.
Yes.
So I think it was always close to my heart in terms of how do we make sure that actually people eat more kosher, more affordable kosher, and more often in South Africa. So when Robbie Brosen approached me and said that we have got to actually exercise on that one, would you like to join forces?
Mm.
As a community project, I was more than happy to join forces with him and look into it.
Mm.
And over the courses of the year, I think I was lucky that I was also involved in a number of kashrut-related projects as well.
That's
so
amazing.
That's how the background on that one is.
Fantastic. So now, the million-dollar question, or the question, I guess, that's on all listeners' minds, and certainly on my mind, is where do you find the time? How do you balance this life? I know you've got two beautiful boys, and you're very proud of them. How do you balance this incredibly busy life?
I think I'm a good organizer, good delegator, that's a given. And I think I have got an amazing support structure with my husband, with my husband's family, and good family and friends. And sort of like kids are raised not only by me, but I think a village in this case.
Okay, great. And the fact that you, as you mentioned, you're so involved in the community and you do so much in the community, what do you get out of that? What feeling, you know, as you said, you're very passionate about like kashrut and the kosher. But what else do you get out of the community, and how does that help to separate you from your hectic business life to be able to give back to the community?
Well, I think businesses at the end of the day, obviously, I'm very passionate about the work that I do and the business I do. But at the end of the day, business is not, or work is not, life. And life is more about family and community.
Yeah.
So having the time, or putting time onto that one and giving some back to the Jewish community as much as I can, even on the background, is actually a huge passion for me. So that's why whenever a call comes from anything in the community or anywhere in the community, I'm ready actually to help at the background.
Great. If you've just tuned in, it's 23 minutes past the hour of 12 o'clock. We're talking to Lizette Russo. Lizette is chatting to us about how she balances life, and her key message was she's very organized. But equally, I think most of us are organized, but you seem to be super organized, but you also seem to be super passionate about certain things, and you get involved in things that mean a lot to you. Is that something that's helped you, where you've been able to take, I guess, the skills that you've learned as coming to South Africa from Turkey? You mentioned you came from Istanbul. Taking all those learning experiences, also the learning experiences that you've learned within the organizations that you've worked for, is that a way that where you inject those, if I can say, those key strengths that you have, it makes it easier for you to get involved rather than trying to do things that you're not good at?
Maybe let me take a step back. I would like to think that I'm a good garbage bin in terms of things and learning things.
Okay.
I like learning, and I like learning fast, and I like learning a lot of things. And, you know, I pull out whatever I have learned maybe 20 years at the right time, and I pull it out, and I try to actually put it into use. But also, I think moving countries at a younger age and also working overseas in different countries for a long time gave me taught me the ability to be adaptable and flexible. Sure. And I think in a busy, hectic life where disruption is here, change is here to stay, being adaptable and flexible actually helps you a lot to be able to actually move from one place to another and also move from one task to another as well. So I think the biggest skill that I learned over time is adaptability.
Fantastic. Lizette, that's a great segue into this report that has been absolutely fascinating. And I guess the additional reason I wanted to have a chat with you, because this is something that is very close to my heart, but it's also, I think, somewhat on everybody's agenda. Everybody's talking about it. And what I'm referring to is an incredible document, and I'm going to share, Lizette's kindly said that I can share her email address at the end of the show, and I'll also post it on our various social media sites. If you want a copy of this report, you can get hold of Lizette and she'll send it to you. Lizette, this document is called Workforce of the Future 2030, and it looks at the global trends challenged by African realities. Now, talk to me a little bit about why you guys put this report together. And the second part of the question is, what were the main things that you picked out that are relevant to the listeners today?
100%. I think workforce of the future, fourth industrial revolution, digital transformation, everybody's talking about. And we hear that, you know, a lot of effort is being put in both by governments and businesses around the world as well. But sometimes we miss the nuance, especially when it comes to Africa. That Africa still is a developing environment. Although it's a huge continent, it has got its own challenges. And we wanted to bring or sort of like flavor the what can be expected within the next 10 or 15 years from the workforce of the future with the realities, what is happening in Africa. Africa is very dynamic. We know that within the next 10 years, probably Africa will be home more than to a quarter of the world population, and 15%.
A quarter of the world population?
Yes.
That is incredible.
It is. And more than 15% of the working population is going to reside in Africa. But what we have also identified is we're not doing much as businesses and government, especially on the education side, to prepare the youth with new skills and new digital skills and everything. I remember that when I was growing up, I'm not going to tell you how old I am, but
I won't tell anyone. Exactly. I've told enough secrets about you today.
100%. But we know that you and I were the same age.
So okay,
that's
cool.
So when we're growing up, we always used to talk about IQ.
Yes.
And then in the 80s and 90s, people started talking about emotional IQ, that you need to be empathic, you need to be sympathetic. Today, it's about digital IQ.
Right.
And I think we're one of the generations that is most affected by it. When we were growing up, the only computer that I know was my Atari or Commodore 64.
I think some of the listeners wouldn't even know what we're talking
exactly.
about, but I'm nodding my head because
exactly.
I know. But I see Craig's looking like he's got a blank look on his face.
What is that?
Exactly.
So, we had the big biggest actually disruption as a age group in our lives in terms of learning how to use a cell phone, learning how to use a computer, and now every day that changes coming. And I think the thing is that then how do we make sure that actually we can start teaching our kids and the youth as early as possible that what the changes and the disruptions that they're waking. I think this is a big learning for us.
So if I could ask you a question, and there's lots of moms and dads listening with kids, and everybody is looking. You've got two boys. I've got kids as well. What are you from, and taking it really from the objective view of the report, what does that tell you, and what are you putting in place for your kids, and what would you suggest to listeners that we should be doing to make sure that our kids are ready for this future of work?
I think one of the things that I'm doing is I want them to read as much as possible, but utilizing what they have got digitally enabled for them. I'm not forcing them anymore like I used to force them 10 years ago. Read a book, open a book, and redo that. If they want to do it on any digital platform or anything like that, then they need to be ready for it. But I think my call is more to the educators as well as the parents, that how do we make sure that actually we bring those skills to the school at the same time? Because we're still quite actually manual, or the topics that we're teaching, obviously they're very useful in the school life, especially in the secondary education. But how can we actually prepare them for the future? And do we have actually enough subjects that there's preparing for them? And I think this is what I'm trying to do. I'm trying to make sure that actually I open them to as much as new platforms and new thinking as much as possible.
So with that in mind, and you've said it's opening up to new platforms and all of that, as you've identified from the report, and what I loved about how you put the report together is you actually segmented it into, if I can say, four quadrants or four, was it quadrants? What did you call them? See, now you're going to test
worlds.
Me. Four worlds. You see, I knew it was four something, but it, so it was four worlds. Talk to us a little bit about, the four worlds, if you can. And as I say, this, I've probably got to read this document again, but the four worlds of work that you mentioned, and I love it. You also put colors to them.
Exactly.
I'm a visual person, so colors work well.
So am I.
Yeah. So tell us about the four worlds.
I think we're talking around, and I think it's the feeling that those colors give you. That's why they're colored that way. But blue world is what we call where the corporate is king.
Right.
Where still we're going to talk a lot about corporates and the big corporates are looking at it. And the type of the digital skills or the new skills that they want is different than where the red world is. And red world is where innovation rules.
Yes.
That's your Amazons, Googles, fintechs, startups, and all of those ones. And as you can see, they have got that fire that is going in them. Although Africa is quite sort of like vibrant in terms of also innovation, we still believe that we're in more the yellows and the greens, more softer tones.
Okay.
Because the green world is where the companies care. And I think as a society, we still, as companies, we have got a role to play in terms of caring about our employees and upskilling them.
Yes.
And the yellow world is where human comes first.
Wow.
And I think Africa is still not there in terms of putting the human first. That's why we're suggesting is that before going into the big innovation, fire innovation, or where corporate is king, let's actually take a stock and let's make sure that actually humans come first and we care about our human beings and the employees that are working for us. And I think it's not only about corporate. If you're running a mom and pop shop, or if you're like entrepreneurs like yourself, or like my husband, it's about actually how do we make sure that actually we put our employees first and we actually take the skills that we know and make sure that they're adaptable and flexible and they're employable if they decide to go somewhere else.
So Lizette, just, and that's fascinating, and I think just looking at that yellow world, which you say is so important, and you alluded to the fact about how EQ is becoming so important now versus IQ, and the fact that we are, even though we don't focus as much on the humans, we are still very human, and that whole softer element which you spoke about is something that is probably unique in a way to Africa and also South Africa. We very much the human side of things. So is that an opportunity then? The fact that we're not so caught up in this digital disconnected human world, that we have an opportunity?
Definitely, but I think that opportunity is more about how do we retrain people and reskill people. Because digital is here. We know that, some of the AI, artificial intelligence, is going to look after the work that is what we call the menial or the administrative tasks. So if we actually really care about our people, then how do we make sure that actually we upskill them so that they can look after more complex tasks that they have done? And in order to be able to upskill them, that means that actually that type of education needs to start already at school and at homes that we have got.
Fantastic. Last point I want to ask you, because we've been talking about kids, and we're all passionate about kids, but the world of work and the future of work doesn't just affect kids, it affects everybody. What is your message in that to people that are basically looking at the second chapter of their lives? And I really, why I call it a second chapter is because it's not really retirement, because I think we retirement's a misnomer. Retirement is kind of just a year or a date or an age that's put into an employment contract. But if we look at reality, people are living much longer, and financially people actually cannot afford to retire at 65 or 60 or 55, whenever it is. So what can individuals or people that are looking to transition into their second chapter, what can they be focusing on to make sure that they reskill and uplift themselves so that they can actually have a so-called second chapter?
I think today all those tools and resources are so available. You know, it's on the tip of our smartphones. So I recommend everyone that, like a person who is also middle-aged like myself, read a lot and use your smartphones to learn something new every day. And the more that you learn, the more upskilled that you're going to be. And also, as I said, make sure that actually whatever type of business you are or whatever type of a situation that you're in, make sure that actually you're flexible enough and you're not stuck in your own ways, and learn to be, have to adapt to the new world.
Absolutely.
I mean, if I have got 1 minute, I mean,
give us your last minute pitch.
It's not a last minute pitch, but you know, when we were again growing up, we expected our kids to tell us that they want to be a fireman, policeman, engineer, doctor, or anything. My 10-year-old son wants to be a professional Fortnite player or a game player.
Yeah.
So that means that actually there will be jobs in the future, or there are already jobs now that we never thought about when we were growing up. And that disruption is actually going to carry on. Their change is going to happen every second year and every third year now. So if you're not flexible enough, that's definitely for sure that you're going to be out of relevance, if I can call it like that, to the society that you're in. So read a little bit, learn every day as much as you can.
So Lizette, I've loved that last part. I think what you've shared with us is keep yourself informed, read. Doesn't matter what you're reading on.
Exactly.
Just read. Keep yourself aware. And what I'm hearing from you is be excited about the future. Don't fear it.
Definitely not.
Fantastic.
Future is for all of us.
Lovely. Lizette Russo joining us in the studio today. Lizette, if people want to get hold of you, what's your email address?
My email address is myfirstname.mysurname@pwc.com. So it is Lizette.Russo@pwc.com.
Oh, and I've been pronouncing your name wrong. Thank you for correcting me right at the end. Is it Lizette?
Okay. Actually, it has got umlauts, but obviously in English it's difficult.
So umlauts is something we should all read about and learn about. Lizette, thank you for making the time and coming into the studio. It's been a fascinating talk. I'm going to post
thanks
your...
Thanks for having me.
You're most welcome. And thanks for all the community work you do as well. It's fantastic. And for inspiring us today, it's great to hear that you can find that balance that keeps you inspired, determined, and lovely to see you in the studio.
Thank you.